Hello, hello, and welcome to the re-release of our podcast for 2016's Bald Move Award-winning film, Arrival. Arrival is also the winner of the Mega Baldy. That's right, we're officially crowning it as the best Bald Move film of the last 5 years. Arrival's a thoughtful, moving, emotional look at alien first contact, perceptions of time, the reality of causality. I think it's a sci-fi masterpiece. And if you're not a club member, it's your first opportunity to hear our full spoiler-filled takes on the film. And I imagine there's probably a lot of Bald Move peeps that haven't heard this yet. So enjoy it, because I remember it being a real doozy of a podcast, too. Like, we really, for a first-run movie, we really sunk our teeth into that. So congratulations, Annihilation, Mega Baldy winner for Best Movie. As mentioned in the previous 2 weeks, or I guess 3 weeks now, this year marks our sixth annual Baldies Awards. That's why we're doing this 5-year Mega Baldy stuff. And we are using the lead up to the Baldies Awards to crown Mega Baldies from the winners of the previous 5 years. The last 3 weeks we did Mega Bald, Bald Mega winners for comedy, drama, best male and female actor. And now it's time to crown the megaest of all the Baldies, best drama of the last 5 years. Remember, the Baldies will be coming out early in February, but there's a survey going on right now. You can participate at baldies.baldmove.com. But if you're hearing this, you better get on it right now, because I think the polls are going to close within like a couple hours of this podcast dropping. So stop what you're doing. Get to your cell phone, baldies.baldmove.com, so you can be heard for the listener's choice, Baldies. This category's best drama. I'm going to read off the nominees. 2015 Best Drama award winner was The Leftovers Season 2. 2016, it was the Westworld Season 1. 2017, The Leftovers Season 3. 2018, Sharpest of Objects, Sharp Objects. And 2019, last year's winner, Watchmen.
You know, it's a real shame that 2016 and 2018 didn't have any Lindelof shows we could give this award to.
Oh, I forgot. This is a Lindelof just complete shutdown.
Yeah, he's won every year he's competed.
Blocking people out, man. He's just, yeah. Three out of five of these
he's the Michael Phelps of screenwriting, apparently, and show running.
And you know what? I have a feeling he's going to take home the Mega Baldy Gold, Mega Baldy Platinum.
I mean, the odds are in his favor. He's in three out of five of these. So
the real question is, does he win it for season two or season three? I mean, look,
it's fair.
You guys, if you're a long term Bald Move fan, you probably know that there's no other way that this can go, because like,
yeah,
on my personal television show pantheon, The Leftovers is the George Washington position. It might be number two for you, I think. If I recall correctly, you've got a show a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to win. And I think it's going to win for season two. Not because season two is head and shoulders above season three, but season two was like one of the last season that they really, truly kind of like raised the level.
It proved what the show could do. Because you're thinking, okay, season one was good. Season one was really good. But what gear does this show possibly have that it can go to that I haven't seen already?
Yeah.
And it showed us. Going to Jardin was like a big change, but also felt right. Felt like Leftovers.
Yeah, I remember that being like, yeah, well, how's it going to work when you're going to this new location and all this kind of stuff, and you add all these new cast members, and it just works, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yesterday there was something going around Twitter. Someone's like posted a still image that shows where television redefined what it could be, and people were like posting the picture of Jesse and Walt looking at that hole in the ceiling where a dead body had melted through. Body goop had melted through, and people were posting, you know, like the time they broke the fourth wall for the first time on Fleabag and a lot of others. And I posted Kevin singing Homeward Bound, and that season two. And like I said, season three is still excellent. Season three was able to find ways to reinvent, you know, their formula within it. But like season two just like fucking left everything else in the dirt as far as I'm concerned. And it's not even an argument. For me anyway. What do you got?
There's also not a big argument to be made for any of these other shows. Up against Leftover season 2. I mean, they're all excellent shows, right? Westworld season 1 is easily the best.
These are all
season
of Westworld.
And it blew my mind. Sharp Objects was incredible. But yeah, I mean, Leftover season 2 is some of the best television I've ever watched.
If we want to sort this, like, just because this is the best drama, the biggest category, and we've also didn't have to deliberate it much. What does the top five look like if we rank them like in absolute best term? Because I got Leftover season 2, Leftover season 3, Sharp Objects, Watchmen, Westworld season 1.
I would definitely take Westworld one higher, at least one higher. Maybe two, above maybe two higher. I might put it right in the middle of the pack if this were just me.
Okay. But do you like Sharp Objects better than Watchmen, or Watchmen better than Sharp Objects?
I think I like Sharp Objects better. Okay. You know, when I did that podcast, I wasn't feeling some things about Watchmen. There was some weird shit that I was just not into.
Remember the elephant plug-in? And for my money, it goes Leftover season 2, Leftover season 3, Sharp Objects, Watchmen, Westworld. Jim throws, inverts Watchmen and Westworld, but... both of us, I'm completely in the tank. I'm wearing it on my sleeve. I always tell people The Leftovers is my favorite show, so it couldn't really go either way. And unfortunately, Breaking Bad's not eligible because I think we finished its coverage like the year before.
Yeah, so I would certainly want to have the discussion about Leftovers and Breaking Bad because those are my two favorite shows.
But you'd also be competing on seasons. That's the thing.
You'd have to
was season 5 of Breaking Bad beat season 2 of The Leftovers? Like maybe season 3-4. But I don't know if season 5 Breaking Bad beats
Crawl Space is what? Leftovers. Season 4?
I think that's 4. I'm pretty sure it's 4.
That sounds right. Cuz to me, like, the image I would put up in that thread you were talking about is Crawl Space.
Yeah. I think that it's funny because the seasons 4 and 5 of Breaking Bad still stick out. So yeah, it's season 4, episode 11 far in my mind because that was the first thing we covered in this kind of depth and the only thing we were covering at the time, crucially. And I was that season, I was doing was daily Breaking Bad news roundup.
Right.
We were doing our individual written reviews of the show. All this stuff is season 4 of Breaking Bad is one of the most crystalline things in my mind.
Yeah. Me too.
Early days.
Yeah, but it's not on this list and Leftovers is. So don't have to have that. We don't have to have that fight.
Yep. Leftovers season 2, congratulations. I could not be happier to crown you as the mega winner of the Bald Move Awards. And we'll probably be announcing this I imagine we'll do a special kind of ceremony for just the mega Baldies winners during the show too. Just give them because, God willing, we're doing this 5 years from now. We can come back and do a mega million Baldy. Mega Omega Baldy. I don't know what's bigger than Mega. Whoa. Giga Baldy. Giga Baldy. 10-year award. Yeah. Or I guess the other thing is you could just continue to do Mega Baldies each 5 years, and then our 25th anniversary,
we'll do
the
five.
Giga Baldies. Oh, the shootout of all five of the five Mega Baldies before.
Yep.
We got to figure out something to keep Lindelof from taking over, man.
Yeah, he's gonna have
how
to stop.
How many shows can he do over 25 years? We'll beat him with the long game.
Do you think 25 years from now, Leftovers season 2 would have a shot?
I don't know, because Leftovers has been in hanging around as number one for 5 years now. The Wire had probably carried the previous 5 years. That's one of the reasons I'm excited to get out of bed each morning. What is the show that's going to dethrone The Leftovers? I can't wait, because whatever it is going to be a gonzo pleasure to cover. It has to be, because it has to be able to defeat The Leftovers. So, yeah, I don't know. Unless I peaked in my mid-30s, that'd be sad. Or late-30s. Yeah,
it's possible.
I peaked in my late-30s.
TV peaked, not you. Playing on television.
Yeah, I haven't changed. The screens have gotten smaller. That's the thing. Everyone's on their cell phones nowadays.
I keep getting older. The screens stay the same size.
All right. Thanks for listening. I really do hope you enjoy Arrival. If you haven't seen it, you ought to. If you haven't heard the podcast, I hope you enjoy it. And we'll see you real soon next week, in fact, for the Baldies.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Hey, everybody. It's Jim and Aaron back with another episode of the first run Bald Movies. Tonight, we're seeing the film. We did see the film Arrival, directed by Denis Villeneuve, I think is how you pronounce that. Which jogged my memory, and I'm like, I just looked that up on Wikipedia because I've been entering a whole bunch of community commissions in our store. And this guy directed a 2013 film Prisoners, starring Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Never heard of it.
It's a crime film that got some note, and he also directed Sicario last year, which I've heard of, I have not seen. This movie stars Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, among others.
Forrest Whitaker as Forrest
Whitaker. It's been a good last week or two for who's the guy from Boardwalk Empire?
Michael Stuhlbarg. I don't know how you say that.
But who did he play?
Arnold Rothstein.
AR. Yeah. It's been a good week for old Arnold Rothstein.
Yeah, last week we saw him in Doctor Strange.
Yep, playing in slightly inept neural surgeon, and this week he's playing a
I don't know what you call him, inept.
Neurosurgeon. He's reprising his role from Doctor Strange.
He's a CIA agent trying to make sense of a world where aliens have come to visit us. Jim, what'd you think of this movie?
Also got Mark O'Brien, which if anybody's watching Halt and Catch Fire, he's Tom. He's been in for a couple seasons now. Also good. So the premise of the movie, I didn't know anything about this movie going in.
Other than it's about aliens.
I had seen the image of these pod things, whatever they were, that's really the only thing that's out there that I saw about this. But then I got in and it starts off very slow. It starts off extremely slow. And I don't know that it ever actually picks up pace so much as things come to natural kind of flows throughout the movie.
Yeah,
and I was really worried, like, mm-hmm. 20 minutes into this, that I wasn't going to like it.
I was just letting it, because you're right, the movie is very slow, it's very quiet, it's very deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think it's for everyone.
No.
I think if you don't like Contact,
sure.
If you don't like Close Encounters the Third Time, or third time, the third and final time, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, if it's got a little bit of like Astronaut's Wife in it too, because there's this like kind of an emotional plot that's mm-hmm. progressively revealed throughout the movie, and I think that's what you mean. I don't think the movie ever picks up pace. There's
right.
a few kind of, I mean, I hesitate
but more
to even
important
say there.
Things start happening, I guess.
They're action moments in the way that like the apparatus exploding in Contact is an action moment.
Right.
It's something that happens mm-hmm. and then something has to be dealt with, but it's not like a big explosion. There's no Hollywood really special effects. All the special effects are solid and convincing, but
yeah,
they're not flashy.
If you don't have any idea what this film is about, it's essentially trying to understand an alien language. Is the large, you know, kind of the overarching premise of this movie.
And I thought some of that stuff was fascinating, just the scholarship and the research that went into it and the and there's a lot of stuff that felt very real and even frustrating about the way the nations dealt with the crisis and the problem.
Sure, but also something very understandable about it.
Sure.
There's a certain thing about the particular alien language that it looks really cool. It's a very visually stunning.
They communicate entirely thing. In coffee stains.
They do. They do.
They've come from the planet Starbuck.
Yeah. You can tell this was a novel before it was ever a movie, because I bet that's where they got the idea for the shape of that. But there's something about the language that is gradually revealed over the course of the movie that is very, very interesting. And that's what I would describe this movie as, interesting.
It's
the same way, like you said, as Contact. It's
a thinker.
Right. It has geopolitics in it. Like you're saying, like all these different mm-hmm. countries trying to figure this out. It has an emotional core to it, I think.
Yeah, it has
more surprisingly than I would have guessed.
It has an emotional payload that really sneaks up on you because of the layered way in which this movie tells a story. Because that's the thing. It's like,
and it's wrapped up so intricately with the idea of this alien language that
I want to say there's a twist, but it's not really a twist. Such as by the time you've gone on this journey, a different point of view of what you've seen.
I will say by the end of this movie, watching it felt like experiencing what the main character was understanding over
the course
of the movie.
And I kind of thought that's the thing, because when I was like you, I wasn't worried, but I'm like two thirds of the movie, I'm like, I'm not sure what I'm going to say about this movie. Like, it's interesting and I've enjoyed my time watching it, but it really is impressive in the way that it communicates its core conceit and themes and you know, the universe that it's trying to show, and it kind of really sneaks up on you in the last, like, it really just comes together in like the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Right.
So, but like, again, I think there's a lot of people that are just going to fucking snore through this thing and they're not going to get it and they're going to be bored and they're going to think it's stupid and they're going to want to know when something blows up and
something does blow up.
Yeah, you will get an explosion.
So
you'll get like 16 frames of a fireball.
Right.
But yeah, I really don't want to say much more about the movie.
Uh huh.
It's very slow.
But I want to talk a lot about it.
I do, yeah, it's very slow. It's very cerebral. It's got really great performances. A Jeremy Renner performance I've never really seen before. Like, I've always seen him as like an action dude.
Right.
He's Hawkeye, he's Marvel, or he's Jason Bourne, whatever the fuck his, not Jason Faux Bourne.
Yeah.
Here he's a fucking scientist and kind of nails it.
I think so. Yeah. Other than being maybe a little more muscly than your average scientist.
Yeah. He actually reminded me a lot of shit. What's that guy?
Matthew Broderick.
He's the guy that plays Stick in Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
You know that guy? He plays a submarine commander in Red October.
Right.
And when he first walked, like Jeremy Renner first walks in, he's got those kind of wireframe glasses and he's got the, and I'm like, holy shit, he looks like these, that this like your classical stereotypical nerdy nuclear physicist submarine commander. Cause he's got like a, he's still got enough of that, I guess, military or tough guy gravitas, right, but he's still like a straight up nerd. So,
yeah, and Amy Adams just nails this.
Man, she's fascinating.
She has to play a lot of different parts here, or express a lot of different emotions, and I think she nails it.
And I've seen her play so many things. I've seen her play like a total sex pot. I've seen her play a damsel in distress, and here she's playing a middle aged mom who's happens to be one of the top linguists on the planet. So. She's really incredible. Has Forrest Whitaker got a droopy eye, or is that something he was affecting?
Yeah. No, he's always got a droopy
eye. I've never noticed him having droopy
eye. How can you not notice that?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Maybe I've never seen him on the big screen before, but yeah, no, I've never noticed that about him.
Yeah,
I thought maybe he was affecting that, or they'd made him up for it. I'm like, oh, that's a interesting choice.
Right. No, that's just him.
But it's funny because
he's putting on an accent.
You know, usually in this movie, the military figure is there to be loud and dumb and stupid and, we got to launch the missiles and we got to. And he's not. And I thought that was like, good. I don't want, because that's the thing. There's a little bit of that in the movie. But I get increasingly frustrated when there's an alien quote unquote invasion movie and like Earth responses to launch their fucking biplanes and their spears and their arrows. Like this thing traveled the vast interstellar space faster than light and you're going to fucking shoot ballistic weapons at it. Get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Like, good luck. You are now the Zulu and they have the minigun. So you know enough. And I'm glad that the movie largely subverts that. So.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
Even though
it
acknowledges it as well, you know, it doesn't ignore it.
Clearly, that's the thing. First contact. I've thought a lot about how it will go, but you cannot. You know, the way the media and the way people work is like the one of the very first things you're going to think of is, oh shit, what are we going to do if these things decide to fight us?
Right.
Because of all the things I just said, like we're essentially helpless.
Well, we already know Zefram Cochrane's going to build a warp drive. He's going to go out. He's going to get spotted.
I thought Jeff Goldblum was going to whip up us an Apple virus.
Oh, David, I was waiting for Harvey Firestein to come out there and start shouting about the alien language.
So I don't know if you got any more to say non-spoilery about this.
Nope.
I feel like you, if you're the type of person that's going to see this movie, you already know it. And I'm giving you a green light on that. I think you'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly a popcorn flick.
No.
We
had a super respectful audience, though, which was nice.
That was nice.
Because that could go really bad.
And actually, respectable credit. I'm still kind of dialing into my new theater. But it was a pretty full crowd for a pretty brand. And I wonder if that is just because, you know, we're closer to the city now and it's just going to get a bigger crowd. Like Doctor Strange was just flat out packed.
Hmm.
But this was like a third full.
Yeah.
Half full, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Which was I have no idea if that's going to translate into box office success. I'd imagine this is not going to make much noise in the box office.
I wouldn't think so. I haven't seen much promotion of
Oscar?
It.
Oscar buzz?
For who? Amy?
Just for the like the script. Because I think the quality of the way things work out and the fact it's such a novel experience might get a little bit. If people see it, they might make some noise. I don't think it's going to get Best Picture or anything, and I also don't think it's going to get the traditional sci-fi awards of like special effects or maybe sound design.
There
because
are some striking images in it.
There are striking
images. The first time you see one of these pods, it's kind of shown with this rolling fog coming over a hill, and that is
the
just
way it apparates and
disapparates
is really cool. And yeah. And I thought the alien design was sweet, and I actually think the sound design is really neat too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like, because there's a lot of alien language and whatnot, and maybe visual design, the alien language is really striking too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's talk about some trailers. Before we do that, though, what did you think? Because this is the second time I've been to this movie theater. Compare and contrast, because I'm trying to decide what is going to be my new home base. Compare and contrast this experience to your last week experience.
Which
do you...
So they don't serve food at this one, which is
not like food on a plate. I ate a pizza, so I just beat the fact that they don't serve food. But yeah, they certainly don't.
They serve like this type of food you'd get at King's Island or
fair enough.
An amusement park.
Concession food.
Yeah, it's concessions.
You can't get beer.
You can, and you can get wine, and you can get ciders and stuff, but you got to go to the bar and get those.
Mm-hmm.
You get coffee if you want at 9 p.m. or whatever.
Why not? Start communicating with the aliens now.
But I think these chairs are a little bit better than the one
the chairs
I was
fucking
at last
rad,
time.
Man.
They're nice. They're nice.
Like, it's going to be hard to go back to the regular old theater chairs.
I don't think I'm going to.
Well, why would I? Well, I'm saying, like, I imagine in my travels, I will go to a conventional movie theater.
Okay,
and, like, if you don't have fucking plush recliners that recline at the push of a button and let me just rack out, then get out.
I did have trouble staying awake at the beginning of this thing.
I was actually afraid because it is so slow and it is kind of late and you get so comfy in those chairs that I imagine that
you have a drink or two and it's over. But yeah, the chairs were a little bit better. The screen was bigger, which was nice. So I think overall I like the theater better.
I feel like the XD projection, there's something to it because it does seem like really pops too.
Yeah, it was crisp. But you know, it's kind of a downside that I can't get an actual meal.
Right.
I had to eat these fucking pretzel bites.
I had those last week. Well, you know, they're
on Thursdays. I just don't have
food.
Time to eat. So the idea that I could eat in the theater while watching the movie is awesome.
Sure.
So.
So trailers. I want to talk about Billy Lynn's long halftime walk because I've since done some digging, or haven't done some digging. I've been spending a lot of time in the movie subreddit on Reddit, and big hubbaboo about this is that Ang Lee filmed it at 120 frames per second. It's going to be displayed where possible at 120 frames per second. Now, last time there's been a big frame rate experiment was the Hobbit series where I actually saw the first one at 48 frames per second and I thought it made it look cheap.
Yeah.
Ang Lee's maintaining that that's because you've got an uncanny valley effect where at 24 frames per second, that reads as like cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
At 48, it looks like a soap opera. He's saying at 120 frames per second that you actually get like a lifelike quality to it. That people are going to find striking and
so all the
very
quotes.
Mixed. There's lots of mixed stuff about, some people think this is the next step in cinema and some people say this isn't a fucking abortion.
Huh. Okay.
I know in video games, frame rate matters a lot.
Right.
I'm very surprised that there seems to be this 24 frames per second purity test that's going around right now that like, you know, 24
right.
frames or death. Like, you know, it's like it's an artistic thing. Like it's the same
like
way.
Dream like
it's the same way that Roger Ebert used to talk about, you know, real film versus digital.
Right.
Like there was a couple years there where he was putting on his grandpa pants.
And he was kind of right about digital in the beginning.
In the beginning. Yeah. But he also like, you know, every single time he'd see something film, he'd have to you know, it's like, oh, it's such a gorgeous, you know. And I like a 35 millimeter print or a 70 millimeter print as, you know, as much as the next guy, an IMAX print. Those things are pretty sweet. But I think the man doth press. So I don't know.
Test, could he tell?
I didn't really. I was kind of interested in seeing it because I like Ang Lee's work. And I think he's kind of a vision. You know, he's a visionary filmmaker. Life of Pi is amazing. The Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is amazing. I even like this Hulk. But I'm like, I'll just watch it on home. Now I'm kind of in a bind. I kind of want to see it in a theater because I want to see this new deal and get a kind of an idea for myself of whether I like it or not.
Yeah. You should probably see it then. It's next week, right? In wide release.
What? No, I thought it was in December. It's next week, really?
I think they said the 11th for like limited release and then 18th for wide, but maybe that was another movie that we saw.
I definitely want to see. I don't know if I'm going to see it opening night.
Yeah, there are so many like quotes in there that are just like, this is the next step in cinema. Like, we've never seen a movie anything close to this.
And I think they're talking about, because there's a lot of, it looks like there's a lot of war footage. And, you know, that's the one thing that I actually has always bugged me about films is when there's a lot of motion going on, I can tell the, I can see the blur and it bothers me.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious to see what this, like, you know, is this going to, and I, you know, I'm guessing it's going to look better than a GoPro. Cause when I think of like high definition, high frame rate, I think a GoPro footage, but I'm curious.
Okay.
Manchester by the Sea.
I also Casey Affleck see this.
Making a bid to be taken seriously as a artist, which is funny because
sure, that's fine.
Today I just added to the shop for a commission for community commissions the cowardly Robert Ford, the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, and okay. I guess Casey Affleck is one of those two characters in that. Because I always thought Casey Affleck is just essentially the decaffeinated version of Ben Affleck.
I don't know. So I saw him in that Joaquin Phoenix documentary.
He's very Giovanni Ribisi. He's in the same lane as that guy.
Okay, sure.
Did I butcher his name?
No.
Oh, wow. Got it. Cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like Casey Affleck. He's all right. But it's also got the kid from Zero Theorem, which is a Terry Gilliam movie, whatever it is, however you say it. I really liked his performance in Zero Theorem, and it looks like he might do something similar, though a little more nuanced and a little more interesting here.
Yeah, the setup seems to be that Casey Affleck is getting guardianship of a teenage boy after his parents died, and maybe even like...
Yeah.
Enough family that he was probably like the last person, and it's not like a comic effect, it's more like this guy is just, you know, I don't know, it's interesting because it's like I feel like there was some scenes that showed him with the child younger where like they had a good relationship, but it's kind of like, you know,
that disrupts your life completely.
Yeah, like if my sister told me one of the last holidays that if she died she wanted me to take her kids, I'm like, Jesus Christ, all three of them.
Like, right. And you have to move to across the country. Or
fuck yeah, yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. And
that
I'm like
the big kicker.
You know, it's like I love these. I like kids in principle, and I like my sister's kids. But that's a lot. That's a lot to mentally and emotionally take. And you got to do it, kinda.
Sure.
Like you can't just let. Like, what are you going to do?
Sorry,
let
him
go to foster care? Like,
right. That's well within your legal rights, as that guy says.
Sure. So. I don't know. It looks interesting. It looks kind of Oscar baity, but it also looks like a quality project. Yeah.
Ben Affleck and Casey Affleck together.
Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard.
Right.
Cotillard or whatever.
That's a spy movie. World War II.
In Allied. I don't think we talked about this before.
I think we have.
Okay.
Many, many times, actually. And I talked about it briefly last week.
Brad Pitt's wife might... No, that's right. You tried to describe it to him. Brad Pitt's wife might be a German spy in World War II. Yeah.
That's it. That's the whole
thing. It's essentially Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
He's either got to kill her or
it's the prequel of Mr. and Mr. Smith.
Yeah, pretty much.
Office Christmas Party.
I kind of think this looks funny. I like T.J. Miller sort of irrationally because of Silicon Valley.
Yep.
And I like fucking Arrested Development guy whose name I can't think
Justin
of.
Justin Bateman. And it's got Kate McKinnon.
Jennifer Aniston. Sure. I like Maul. I might want to see this.
Yeah.
There's the one particularly horrifying and hilarious scene where
the
guy
takes
swings
a header
from the second balcony.
Oh, Jesus.
And just drops onto a rack. And I don't know if he gets up from that or what, but violent, disturbing, but hilarious. And I don't know. Maybe I want to see it.
I just don't know if I enjoy those type of movies anymore. Like, I've moved on to stuff that's like more absurdist and.
Yeah.
That kind of more than I have like, you know, something that's just like, oh, look at these people being drunk and crazy.
Right.
I mean,
it's a little too bro for me usually, but
yeah, we'll see.
I'll probably watch it when it comes to like Netflix or something.
So there you go. There's the trailers. We are about to engage in deep spoiler talk. I would highly encourage everyone not to listen to this next part unless you've seen the movie, if you think you're going to see it at all.
Thank you.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Where do we even start with this? Does it matter? Do we need to start at the beginning or can we start at the end?
It really doesn't.
Yeah.
So you say you got a lot to say about this movie. I don't feel like I do. Like, the experience of this film and watching it and watching the slow dawning of what was going on with her daughter and hers relationship and what they were doing with it in the movie took me by surprise. And then the, I don't know what you would call it, an act of faith or whatever, acknowledgement of the universe is deterministic to get to opt to go through all that again, even if you've gone through it, like, or the fact that you can't help but go through it. I thought that was really interesting and also kind of moving.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100%. I love how they constructed this movie because I really do feel like I should have seen this coming all the way from the beginning. And therefore, I feel like I'm experiencing roughly the same thing that she is.
Do you think, because I had the same thought, like, Jesus, how did I not know what was going on before they kind of explicitly told you what was going on? And then I think maybe the slow pace kind of lulls you into, like, this is a pretty straightforward story about, and they're very tricksy in a sixth sense kind of way, where a lot of her effect in the beginning, she's just a busy professional person who's lonely. It reads kind of like a woman whose life has fallen apart and she's drinking wine by the bottle. Like, you know, she's got the bottle sized glasses, and that's misdirection, making you think, oh. But the whole time I was thinking, damn, Amy Adams look awfully fucking young. Like, and they don't age her at any point in, like, the 20 years, I guess, she goes through in this movie, which might be a little tricksy too.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's something about that where they mention at the very beginning how memory is a funny thing, and that, and she makes it somehow clear that she's not sure what was in the past and what's in the future, right up front in this movie. And so it makes it a little easier to kind of spot things that are happening as they happen,
I guess. But that I also just interpreted that in the context of what it's like to have a child that dies at a relatively young age.
Sure.
Like the thing she said perfectly described what I was seeing too.
Right. Right.
And that's very sixth sensey. Like, I kind of want to see this again. Because I think like the sixth sense, when I saw it again, I'm like, oh, well, yes, of course, this is exactly what's going on. Right. I feel like it's a similar thing will happen if I watch this again, too. It's like, I'm not going to glean anything new out of it. It's just because that's kind of the brilliant part, is by the time you understand everything, you understand everything.
Yeah.
And then I was surprised that after they'd revealed everything, the final like 5 minutes of the movie has a lot of emotional weight because it's essentially a woman deciding to, you know, experience a bunch of painful things over again.
Yeah.
And I can't fully articulate why.
But because there are also the good times in there, you know, they show them dancing in the kitchen. You know, it's her life. It's the story of her life. And it's not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. It's just what it is.
Right.
Which is a fundamentally different understanding than how we as humans view it. Right. Like, that's what the movie is really trying to get at is. And you have to go with this conceit that the language you speak changes the way you think.
Isn't
and not
it weird
just,
how like just coincidentally three different things that we've seen in the last month or two are kind of wrapped up into that conceit?
Yeah.
First Pontypool, then West Wing World. And now this movie, they're all about how language can influence the way you perceive things, which they make a statement to help you kind of like introduce that concept that like, depending on what language you were raised in can change how you view
right
yourself and others and your place in the world and like all kinds of different things. And that seems very true to me.
Sure. Now the conceit there is that we'll actually change your ability to see the future and the past as one
that
thing.
That is
right?
Like, that's, sci-fi concept.
Right. Yeah. That's something you just have to roll with. And I'm fine rolling with that because it's such an interesting idea. And they do a lot of other like little things in the way that like all the different nations try to communicate with this, right? She talks about how China plays a game with it. It's playing mahjong. It's playing tiles with it.
And it flips the table and says, "You're fucking cheating."
Right.
Bullshit. You pulled a dragon tile.
but that's interesting because like she says that there are really only a couple of outcomes there, and it's all about offense and defense, and you get sort of an aggressive relationship with it.
Yeah,
and then China falls
into
that hole
too. Right.
And she also mentions chess, and Russia's also one of the nations that kind of falls down the rabbit hole with the violence, and thinking that there's something potentially dangerous about to happen. So I think it's really interesting there.
One thing I found frustrating, and I don't know whether this is conceit to dumbing dance things down to the audience, but I don't think the people that were going to probably see this movie needed it, is I didn't really think it was Forrest Whitaker had to act like a complete fucking moron. Like,
what do you mean?
Amy Adams goes up and gets them to spell out a few letters, and she like on her second, and they're like, okay, what are they talking about? Why are you doing, what's all this grade school grammar and shit? She's like, motherfucker, do I really have to explain how you teach someone to communicate?
Do you not remember how you learned the English language?
Yes. Have you never been in a country and try to communicate to someone that you don't understand? You know, you don't even have a common frame of reference. And except for you, right. You've been from the same planet. You have the same body. You have this, you know, like,
yeah,
I that stuff was so fucking tiresome. And they did it like two or three times. And then the other thing I felt was frustrating is that the two scientists in the room are the only ones that weren't freaking out when they were saying like, you know, use the weapon or, you know, and I'm like, are you really going to nuke the alien because you have only taught it 20 or 200 words?
Right.
And it's such an ambiguous statement. Yeah. I just, that stuff is like, felt a little forced to me.
Yeah. It hasn't made any aggressive move toward you.
Nothing. Even when you fucking tried to blow it up because, you know, and that's the other thing. I thought that was horseshit. No fucking way did these guys, these security dudes manage to run a blockade and upload a bunch of C4 and set a 10-minute timer and no one notices until the scientists decide to make. But also, who the hell's controlling access to this thing? The scientists can just waltz up and be like,
wait, so that wasn't sanctioned?
No.
Oh, no. I thought it was.
No, they showed the scene of him talking to his wife and how frantic and desperate she was set up that this was like a rogue action of the security forces.
That makes so much more sense because I'm like, why would they let them up there if they knew there was a bomb up there?
And why are they so nonchalant about it?
Okay, all right.
But I thought those are the two minor missteps of the film.
Yeah.
And I don't think they needed it. I almost feel like they saw a first cut of this movie and like, shit, there is no tension
right
and conflict at all.
This was essentially Jake Busey getting onto the fucking the portal machine, whatever it was, in Contact, right?
Was that Jake Busey? Oh, you're right.
I think it was Jake Busey.
Yeah.
Essentially him getting on there and blowing it up.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, they really took a lot of contact cues.
It was Jake Busey. You're right. He was the religious nut job.
Yeah, he was. You tell by the teeth.
Great day for Busey today.
It sure is. The other thing I thought was interesting is they show her having written a book in the future that is the handbook to this language.
This universal language.
And we know that the aliens want them to help out in 3,000 years with something, right?
Which the movie never tells us.
Yeah, that doesn't actually end anywhere. And we assume that in 3,000 years, something would happen.
And we'll have our shit together to where we can help
them. And they're giving us the weapon, which is the language, the ability to essentially all of humanity to see into the future, to know what these events are, right? At least their own lives, and maybe they can come together. Maybe this will be a unifying force.
So I've kind of been wrestling about whether the aliens intended all humans would be able to use this time surfing communication, or whether that's something unique to Amy Adams, since she has such a kind of an instinctive grasp of linguistics. Because it doesn't seem like, when we go to some of these flashes in the future, that no one else really can do this but her.
Well,
but I also think that definitely the aliens at very minimum wanted to unite Earth so they can start working together towards common purposes. So they would be in a position to be able to understand this language fully and navigate time and be able to help. Be able to be good galactic citizens in the future. That's what I thought.
Yeah, they mentioned specifically 3,000 years, and I don't know why. They never tell us.
Right.
But I did get the impression that during the scenes where she is, like, learning the Chinese, I don't know his fucking name.
I think it's Zhang.
I don't know his position. Zhang. Sure. That's his name. When she's talking to him, and he's giving her his phone number, his private phone number, and telling her what to say, I got the impression that he also had come to a grasp of this language, and that this was something that they were doing together, not necessarily like...
Oh, that's interesting. He did say, he came up and said, I don't know why, but I feel like I need to show you this.
Yeah.
Which might be kind of, because she also, it's not like she's intentionally navigating, she's intuiting these flashes of her previous and future selves.
I don't think he's like at the same level that she is at that point.
Yeah.
When they actually have this conversation. Now, I'm sure that conversation probably, I don't know, that conversation can't take place any differently in the future, right?
Well, so that's the other question. I don't know if we want to get to now, but I want to explore the concept of the universe being entirely deterministic.
Okay. I did want to talk a little more about the time stuff.
I definitely want to come back to a clockwork universe, because it seems like that's what the movie is kind of promulgating. Because I don't see how, if the universe is non-deterministic, unless there's like, I guess you could have like a multiverse theory. I don't know. I'm speaking out of my ass.
So it would have to be deterministic for them to ever have that conversation that tells her to have the conversation.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Sure. I see what you're saying.
Because if it's not a universal reference for, if there's not a universal reference point to view time and events, then how the hell does any of that stuff work? And also, it also robs a little bit of the emotional payload, because at the end, she has no choice but to go through everything she's gone to go through. It's not like she elected
to take
the pain with the pleasure and joys. She's just like, it's a more of a resignation of like, well, that's the way life is.
Right.
Which is fine. That works too.
Yeah, I mean, coming to terms with that can also be a sort of inspiring thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't have to go get all bent out of shape because a bad thing's going to happen to you.
Right.
So it's interesting, like, how this would change humanity, because, you think of a baby being born with this ability, right? As they grow up, they don't speak English, they don't speak Chinese, they speak or they understand this language and how they could then see the future of their life. And I don't know if they would understand what they're seeing. It would almost be like your level of the mastery of the language would help you to understand what you're seeing in these flashes.
Yeah. How does she keep? Because at some point they imply that she's keeping her child's diagnosis from her, which, you know,
I guess by only teaching her English.
But you're not going to teach her the universal language.
Yeah, what the hell?
Aren't they teaching that in schools?
Like, she wrote a book on it. Right. Teach your daughter that. Come on. It's a huge advantage.
Right.
In every situation.
I also wonder, because they also
make
it seem...
But it's like an evolution of humanity, right? I mean, that changes the species at a fundamental level.
Why did Jeremy Renner get mad at her for making the wrong choice?
When he left her?
I mean, I don't think it was a course of treatment. Was it the fact that he wasn't going to tell her? She wasn't going to tell her the disease, that she had the disease?
So I don't know when this stuff, is that even a question you can ask in this movie? I don't know how much of this stuff is a single timeline, because I feel like the stuff that happened in the kitchen scenes later on, if he learns this language, he's going to understand it all, right?
Right.
When she tells him there's going to be this disease thing, he can go, yep, no, you're right.
I suppose, but I came away with the movie understanding that only she had the full capabilities of this language.
Right.
So was it
something you can't learn? Did you think, because, I mean, they make the point, like, your language... the language you speak changes not just how you think, but
if Jeremy Renner is able to fully master it.
Right. So but maybe he leaves her and then later on he masters it and he's like, oh yeah. And he comes back.
Oh no, I don't
or
think
it does happen.
I
and then he comes
yeah,
back.
I think all those scenes in the kitchen were of their early relationship before they had the kid.
Right.
But again, I was like, I'm thinking like, okay, well, was he mad that she was going to tell her, or that she decided not to tell her, or, I don't know.
It's definitely one I'm going to have to see.
Because I've always wondered that too. Is like, what, when, if you knew a child was going to die of a genetic condition, but not like right away, like they're going to like maybe make it till they're 18 or 19.
Right.
You know, they got cystic fibrosis or muscular dystrophy or something like that that's going to take them, but not like, you know, like you got childhood cancer and you're going to die.
Right.
Like, when do you tell a child that? How do you tell a child that?
I don't know.
I don't either. Fuck all that
impossible.
Shit. Like, that's like unbearably sad subject.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how it goes, but there's something very interesting about the idea that humanity now has this power, essentially.
And also, because I've read some lot of far out examinations of, you know, what the concept of time, mm-hmm. and to try to explore it in like a higher dimensional way. The fact that you said like, oh, can you even say like when something happens? And I'm like, that's a funny subject, because like we don't have no problem about talking about where something is, and that we're three dimensional beings. We can navigate through space.
Right.
So we can go to these coordinates and we can even say when something's happened, but where it's like, oh, you can take a wrong turn and go back and find it. When is something that's, you got the one chance.
Right.
But there's nothing that I don't think that I think that's what's interesting. There's nothing that really violates anything. If you could, you know, go back and forward through time.
Okay.
Right.
I don't know what you mean by violates anything, I guess.
It's like saying that, like saying, I'm not saying like that you could change anything, but you could navigate to the future and remember and perceive the future as easily as you can perceive the past.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. I don't have a satisfactory answer about why we can't do that.
Right. So the same way that, like, if you walk across the room, you are no longer on one side of the room. You're on the other.
Right. And I
you
can
would
go
just
back.
Be. Right. But you're only in one given time at any place, right? And those things that you do in that time are things that happen in that time. It's not like,
right.
But this becomes a problem.
And the fact that you remember your future in a way you remember your past. Like, some things are really vivid and some things are kind of fuzzy. Because I thought that was interesting too. When Zhang came up and said, she's like, oh, right, I called you.
Yeah.
In the same way that he would have said, hey, we met 3 years ago at a conference. Oh, that's right. Like, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it does make it feel like a memory rather than a precognition.
And it might be. I mean, maybe that's because it's not. It's not exactly precog. And I wonder if you could, like, I think that's fascinating. Like, what is it like to perceive that?
Sure. Right. And it's something that in most fiction I've seen, this is what's super fascinating about this movie to me is in most fiction I've seen, it's just an innate ability that a being or a species or whatever has, right?
Right.
Like an alien race comes down and they just have the ability to move through time. It's something innate to their form,
right,
and what they are.
We don't see the missing link or them groping through
right,
that
the evolution
power.
To that. Or
even in Star Trek, it's like one right, guy, he's a human and suddenly turns into the Sylvanian man. You right. know, it's like.
But in this, it's an understanding
yeah.
that evolves you. And that's interesting. And I don't know if there's a message kind of, you know, buried in there. It's not, I don't think it's buried super deep, but this sort of unifying idea that as a species, we could be much more than we are if we learn to communicate.
Yeah. And that like, it, you know, that time is a much of a matter of perception. It's a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking of like some conversations I had in the Westworld podcast. This is bicameral mind, like, the theory going as thousands of years ago, we've always had, well, not always, but for a lot 100,000 years, we've had this conscious and unconscious self, right? Right.
Yeah.
But only very recently, we become aware of the internal monologues and the your conscious thoughts as being something that comes from within us. It's not yeah. like an external force. Nothing changed. It was just our perception.
Right.
So, like, is it totally mind-blowing that we could choose or train ourselves to perceive time differently?
Right. It's an interesting concept. I mean, I don't like, know if there's any science to back this up at all, but
no.
it's an interesting
it's
idea.
It's an interesting thought experiment yeah. or a philosophical experiment. Same way, like when you look up and see the stars, you know you're looking at things that happened hundreds of thousands right. of years ago. Mm-hmm. Like no one gets all their fucking panties in a wad about that concept.
For sure.
Yeah. That like, depending on how far the star away is, you're seeing anything that happened from a year to hundreds of thousands, or even millions of years ago.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. It's very, very interesting to me.
Yep. I guess I don't have much more to say about this movie. Did we talk about the?
I feel like we talked about the non-determination. Really,
frankly, like
what is it? Because
I want to see the 3,000-year event. I want to see what they're preparing us for and what humanity looks like 3,000 years into the quote-unquote future with this ability.
Do you think we have the vision and imagination to make that movie?
I don't think so.
Because that's the thing.
I don't personally know.
I can barely grasp what they're trying to show me in this movie.
Right.
That's why I think you said it's like the interesting or fascinating thing is the fact that this movie does seem to be like on the tip of my tongue. Like I can
yeah.
almost articulate the feeling that they're trying to get me to feel and exactly the concepts they're trying, but not quite. And I'm like, I wonder if the filmmakers themselves grasp that, and this is also based on a novel, which I'm gonna have to read.
I mean, it's so masterfully done there, and that's the thing about the language too, right? It's a visual thing that expresses an idea that there aren't really
right.
There aren't really words for. There aren't sounds for. It's
right.
just. It's based on concept, based on
right.
a feeling almost,
right.
and that feels very much like this movie.
Yeah, and it's unlike Primer, which I thought was a brilliant film, but cheated at the end. Like there's okay. things I think are done, like I wish that didn't happen in this film because I think they take away, but mm-hmm. I actually love to interview the director of the film and be like, why did you do some of these things? Did you not trust the auditor? Did the studio make you, or did you think it was just even too slow that because like I felt in the end some of those things distracted from the points the movie you're trying to make. But it's one of the hardest sci-fi films I've seen in a good long time. I'm trying to think.
Maybe like The Martian was the last one I saw that was really.
But that's a different type of sci-fi.
Oh, very different.
Like
yeah.
that's like, isn't it cool
sci-fi.
What we can almost do essentially, or what we could right. probably do right now if we decided to do that instead of other bullshit that we're doing.
Interstellar.
Yeah, Interstellar is a good size, but even because they had that fifth dimensional beings and the fact
right.
that we caused our own. That was a noodle bender that we essentially saved ourselves from our own extinction.
Right.
Because we evolved.
Because Matthew McConaughey likes to float around in a bookstore.
Something like that. Right.
A bookshelf.
Yeah, there's another. But I guess maybe this movie is the most successful of those. And because I thought Interstellar. I remember Interstellar. I just got to a point where, like, I don't think it's possible to do what just happened by the movie's own logic and by how I understand science. Whereas,
right,
with this movie, I'm just at a loss because I intuitively understand what you're trying to do. And I don't, it doesn't seem like there's any holes in it. You just have to accept, I think, maybe not, that you've got a you have a very linear, deterministic universe. It's not random. It's like it's a clockwork mechanism that's going to play back and forward the same way every single time.
Yeah. Well, I found my next Audible book. I got to go get this thing.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
Check out the book.
Yeah. The novel's called The Story of Your Life, and it's written by Ted Chiang, I think it looks like it's Chiang, but it's got an I in a weird place. So maybe it's Chiang.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, it's, I thought it was Chinese too, but apparently it is English.
Okay.
But yeah,
with The Martian, I went back and read the book afterward, and I want to do that with this.
And it's a short story too.
Right.
And it's a 2000 Nebula, award winner too. So, I think it's cool. Oh my God. It's the first paragraph quotes something from the Saper-Whorf hypothesis or Whorfianism.
What?
Some linguistic and cognitive, it's okay. Named after Worf, son of Moog.
Right.
It's the Moog-Worf hypothesis.
Did you know Alexander is a palindrome?
No, but if you beat with the batleth enough, it'll be one. Yeah, that's great. That's also an awesome metaphor. The daughter's name and it being a palindrome and how
right.
This movie works forward and backwards. And
yep.
It's cool. It's a thinker. I'm going to be thinking about it a lot, and I definitely want to tear into this book. So,
That's it.
Like a lot of our first run movies, this is just going to fall apart. Peter out at the end.
That's fine.
Yep. We'll be back in a couple weeks for a Harry Potter thing, and Jim is going to sit that one out.
Yeah.
Of course, we got lunch tomorrow, and everything comes out next week. We just recorded a Point Break podcast. It's going to be coming out next week. This is glorious.
Oh man.
Well, we didn't record it. We're recording it yesterday. We watched it today.
Right. What a movie.
We're going to record it yesterday. Did I say that? I think I looked at the coffee stains too much, Jim.
Yeah.
It's all becoming six-dimensional chess now. Anyway, good night. Have a great weekend. And if you want your mind blown, go see this movie.